When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The following is a presentation of the Belly Up Sports Media Network.
Here comes pressure, throws it to Eckler on the screen. He's got a block to the 10, to the 5, into the end zone.
High pass. Did Williams make that catch? My goodness.
For a first down, Herbert with time, now running out of time, throws on the run, down the sideline, caught in the end zone, Keenan Allen for the touchdown.
Throws, and again it's intercepted, and that's Asante Samuel.
Here's another one, watch out.
How did it feel when Derwin James absolutely powerbombed the f*** out of you on national television?
You're listening to the Shock Therapy Podcast with Tyler Lawrence and Zach Alfers.
Boom, and we are back with another episode of the Shock Therapy Podcast. Dude, the season's here. We are less than a week from game day. I feel like every year, like I'm always waiting all year long for this moment. My hopes are high. I've got like huge hopes. Like I'm stoked. Like I can't wait to watch like this new offense, like going, taking flight, dude, like this is awesome. And I can't wait to talk more about a team that we really dominated, like getting back into the groove. Like, this is it, man. How are you doing?
It's football season. I mean, I'm as excited as I could be at this point in the year. 0-0, same record as the reigning Super Bowl champs who in less than 2 days are going to get after it. So we get some live football action in 2 days. And then the big day, Sunday, most teams going at it. I'm excited. Right out the gate, we get a really high explosive matchup against two teams who were really gunning it last year, who could really move that football and score a lot of points. With some improved defenses. So it'll be interesting. I know they got a new defensive coordinator. We got a new offensive coordinator. Same faces mostly, but some new to make this matchup a little interesting this time around.
You know, the Dolphins, they really just want to beat you with speed. That's how they want to beat you. They just want to be faster than you at every position. They can do it at wide receiver. Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, those guys are lightning fast. They like to get them the ball over the middle and just break open wide open yards. Defensively, I feel like they're pretty much the same. Like the both teams return pretty much the same team from a year ago. I think that the big thing you're looking for on defense is their defensive coordinator, who was what's his name? Losing it.
Fangio.
Vic Fangio. Vic Fangio knows Brandon Staley really well, considering Brandon Staley was on his staff. The Chargers defensive coordinator from last year goes and joins as the passing game coordinator for the Dolphins. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it, but did you hear Mike McDaniel's press conference?
No, I saw he was, I saw there were some comments being made about it, but I didn't really see what he was saying.
Yeah, I watched about 4 minutes of it. I don't know if I like Mac McDaniel, especially after that press conference, because he's talking about, like, he's just shooting some shots there that need to, like, come out and be like, all right, bro, what are you talking about? He was talking about how, what was the name of the defensive coordinator for us last year that left to go be Rinaldo Hill. So Rinaldo Hill, I guess he's like Rinaldo Hill, like jumped on sword and kind of took a lot of the bad stuff. And then Brandon Staley went and took all the good parts from last season, and basically saying that like Brandon Staley took credit for everything that went right and didn't give any credit for everything that the defensive coordinator did there. I don't think that actually happened, man. Come on. And he's just like, he's throwing some shots. I thought I liked Mike McDaniel, but after those comments came out and he kind of like brushed him off really quickly, right? Maybe he's just, joking, having a little back and forth. But like, I've never once heard Brandon Staley say that the reason we lost is because of somebody else.
No, that just sounds like a young head coach who's upset about his team losing in a very embarrassing fashion last time around. I also seen him saying something, because I know Leon Eichenberg has been hurt a lot through preseason, so Connor Williams has been getting a lot of snaps at center, and he's been taking first team snaps a lot recently. And I know he was asked about that, and they're like, and his response was, "Yeah, what is his name? Connor Williams is taking some first team reps in practice. He may or may not get reps in the game. Just like he, I don't know. He's just very childish, it seems, and I don't think." Well, we'll see really soon whether or not he's a good leader, but I just don't think that bodes well when you're that childish and you're never, I don't know. I just don't see him taking a lot of accountability for where he failed last year, especially with his hand, all those head injuries. And you guys, and they completely dismantled down the stretch last year. They were being talked about as one of the hottest teams in the NFL and then just completely fell apart, and I haven't heard him once man up and take any responsibility for that. So I just think that kind of lacks a little bit of leadership there.
It's a very interesting leadership up there. Like Mike McDaniel, he's a young guy. He's supposed to be known as this, like, do you ever get a chance to listen to the Athletics coaches? They're talking about the coaching tree that comes from Mike McDaniel, Brandon Staley. They're talking about Sean McVay, that whole coaching tree. Did you ever get a chance to watch that? Because Mike McDaniel is part of that, right? But he seems like the forgotten guy inside of that, because he's like the least important of that entire coaching tree. Yeah, he's a head coach. They have found a lot of success through the air in this passing scheme that they have through the Dolphins. But he's the most irrelevant of that entire coaching tree. Barely in the conversation in comparison to like Sean McVay, which they couldn't talk enough about. 49ers head coach. I'm really bad with names today. 49ers head coach.
Kyle Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan, and like how they've like really molded this brand new offense, and you know, each of them are competing back and forth against each other. Nobody was talking about Mike McDaniel. Mike McDaniel was talking about them, but he was the most irrelevant of the entire bunch, which I thought was hilarious. So this guy could talk all he wants, smoke all the vapes that he wants at practice and all the other things that he's well known for. He's not known for anything good. So.
No. It's gloves off come Sunday. I honestly had no animosity towards this team at all. I'm just kind of felt like indifferent. Like I know there's the quarterback rivalry between Tua and Herbert, but I never really bought too much into it. Like they're just a team I don't really think a whole lot about. But that makes me angry. So now I want to go and punch them in the mouth and embarrass them again.
I think it's a fun team. Don't get me wrong. Like I think when you look at this roster, especially on the offensive side of the ball, Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill on the same team, like that's a fun combination. That's going to score you a lot of points. That's going to get you a lot of seats on game day. Tua is probably one of my favorite players just in terms of his mindset. Like I like Tua a lot, like the player, the person. I don't think he's got really a good fair shake, but I like this team. Don't get me wrong. Like they're a fun team that I would watch if I'm flipping through and there's not like a great game on and I see they could be playing anybody. They could be playing the Commanders or Arizona. I would watch just because I think that this team is fun to watch. But I just don't like that leadership up at the top. Just based off of what I've heard today, based off the little things from Mike McDaniel, like he's kind of controversial inside of all of, you know, the media. The way he talks on camera, is it rubs me wrong. Like he just seems like kind of an asshole, just kind of low key of an asshole, right? Like I don't like that, man. But like Braxton Berrios, he's a fun player to watch back when you were with the Jets. They like these small, speedy types of guys who can win track meets, and that's what their offense is based around. I think they have the perfect quarterback for that. They've been talking. I listened to a couple Dolphins podcasts. Tua, I guess, spent a lot of time this offseason trying to make the throws to the you know, outside the numbers part of the field, which is not what he's good at. Let's get into the offense. Tell me a little bit about what you think with the skill position players of, you know, who Tua is going to be spreading the ball around to. And is this offense going to replicate the success they had last year? Or do you think teams are just going to figure it out? They're just going to man them up, man the little guys up, and really force the timing away from Tua. So, like, what is the recipe to beating this team? And are you think that they're the real deal?
I think when looking at the Miami offense, I think you nailed it. It starts with speed, and those guys on the outside, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, if you let them, they're going to carve you up because they're just so fast. They're very gifted route runners, and both of them are elite when the ball is in their hands. They went and got Braxton Berrios. They added Cedric Wilson to kind of round out that depth. I think those guys are give them another added cushion behind just, you know, speedy deep threats. I don't think beyond that they did a whole lot to improve. I know they went and tried and got Jeff Wilson, kind of addressed that run game, which was kind of non-existent a lot at times last year.
He's on IR now, I think.
He's hurt, so he's not even good. He's not even suiting up for at least the first 4 weeks. Raheem Mostert was your other speedy, kind of going to be your change of pace back, but now he's 31-year-old guy who has injuries. Now he's thrown into a workload that he wasn't expecting. I know they drafted in the third round A-Chain, who is very, very fast too, fits that mold, but is an unproven guy. Their tight end room, Durin Smith, Tyler Croft, not guys that are going to really kill you in the passing game. And then I think they didn't do anything, in my opinion, to improve their offensive line, which I thought was their biggest reason for failure down the stretch. Tua just didn't have time. And even with, you know, only needing a fraction of a second for Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill to get open, he was just harassed a lot. The how you get Tua into making mistakes and not being an elite offense is taking away his first and second read. Once he has to adapt and go through his progression to a third and fourth option, he panics and he throws bad balls and they get picked off a lot of the time. So that's getting after, taking away his main shots, getting after him as far as a pass rush. That's kind of what, and not being able to establish a run game is where they got in trouble last year. And I just don't think the offensive line is that much improved. Teron Armstead didn't even practice today, so he's questionable for Sunday. Austin Jackson's had an up and down career. We don't know who's starting at center because Liam Eichenberg's hurt. Isaiah Wynn has also had an up and down career. I think Robert Hunt is your most consistent guy, but he's not elite in any means. So that's kind of my breakdown of this Miami offense. I think it's very similar. I think they attempted to add some depth, but I think they neglected their biggest weakness, which was that O-line. And I think it's going to, even starting week one, give them problems.
Yeah, I think that this offensive line is kind of in limbo right now. Austin Jackson is going to be their starting tackle at right tackle. He only played 2 games last year. He was drafted pretty highly out of USC, just really hasn't been available, hasn't really showed up. Almost lost his starting spot to Liam Eichenberg there for a while. They were in a camp battle between Liam Eichenberg and Austin Jackson a couple years ago. neither player really took advantage. They ended up moving Eichenberg inside. And then they signed Brandon Schell and Greg Little last year to compete. And they really just forced Austin Jackson to sit and learn. Schell and Greg Little were not all that great. They both gave up almost 75 pressures together last year between the combination of them both. Terron Armstead finally got a healthy season-ish out of him last year, played 14 games last year, only gave up one sack. He's still a really, really good player. It's just whether or not he's going to be available. I think that he is going to be available based off of some of the reports I've been reading. Is more precautionary than anything. They don't really have a whole lot of depth. Connor Williams, Robert Hunt, they're quality players. Both of them played over 1,000 snaps last year. Gave up six sacks between the two of them last year. I think that there is enough on this offensive line. I just don't think that they have very much depth, and they're already banged up. We haven't even talked about Isaiah Wynn. Isaiah Wynn was supposed to be like a really – like that was supposed to be the new New England Patriot protege at tackle who just couldn't develop, ends up getting cut by Bill Belichick. Didn't play well when he was on the field, and now he's going to sit as their backup guard right now, potentially playing tackle if Armstead's not available to go. I mean, it's a young group when you look at Eichenberg, Robert Hunt, Austin Jackson together. Isaiah Wynn's only like 26 years old. But all of them, all of these guys have underperformed to date. And now you're really throwing them out into the wolves and hoping that they can stay alive. I don't know if they can. They've got Armstead, who could be kind of a veteran presence for them over there at left tackle. It's just not good enough for what they need. It's okay, though, because Tua just gets the ball out of his hand quickly, right? Like, he's not taking seven-step dropbacks. It's 1-2-3 and let it go. 1-2-3, let it go. They throw a lot of screens. They do a lot of misdirection type stuff. What the Chargers did last year is they just manned them up, forced them off the line of scrimmage, unable to get off and get into these timing routes. And it really hurt what the Dolphins wanted to do. And it was really when their season started taking a dip last year, right? So when they lost to the Chargers toward the back half of the season, they lost one, they lost two, they lost three. And we beat them without Derwin James in the lineup. We beat them without J.C. Jackson. We beat them without like three of our starting wide receivers. Like, we beat them. We were even more banged up than they were last year, and we still forced them out of their play calling offensively, and we kind of ran away with that game. Like, nobody expected us to go into that game and dominate. We went in there, and we completely shut off their entire offensive game plan, and there is nothing that they could do. We'll see if that changes this year. I think that, you know, another year in the system, they might be a little bit better, but really just dependent on whether we go into it with the same game plan or if we try to change things up a little bit more. I'm not buying it, to be honest. I don't think that they're going to be as good as they are. I think they've got a few superstar talents that kind of carry them the rest of the way, but I don't think that they're strong enough at the core of their team to really be a successful team next season.
No, they're going to be streaky. I think they're going to be streaky. They got the explosive talent at the front end of that depth chart. As soon as they get one or two key guys banged up, they're going to struggle. But it's going to be a weekly basis kind of thing with the Dolphins. I think week one, I think they're going to struggle. That offensive line is not played together completely, and they don't get. They start off with a tough matchup, having to deal with Joey Bosa, who didn't play in the first matchup, Khalil Mack, who's back at it in the second season with LA. It's not going to be easy out of the gate. So I think they're going to need a couple days or a couple weeks to get in their rhythm. I think they could rattle 3-4 games in a row, but I don't think it's going to be until week three we see their first win, honestly.
I also think that their rushing offense is abysmal. Raheem Mostert, like, as a starter, not good. Jeff Wilson, as a starter, not good.
They can't run the football.
They can't. They have home run hitters, but you can't go into a long season expecting to be unable to run the ball. That's why the Chargers were blown out by the Jaguars in the second half of the last game that they played. Well, they could not run the ball. They could not control the clock. And you can only hit so many home runs in a game.
Well, and I thought a healthy Wilson was going to be a good addition for him because he is a guy who is tough to bring down, who is physical, who could also catch the ball, but I don't think you needed him with A-Chain and Raheem Mostert. Him not being healthy now leaves you with talented running backs, but nobody suiting up come Sunday is able to run the football effectively. And I think you're going to need that in a slugfest. Whichever team can get up to their lead and be able to control that the clock once they establish a lead, I think that's going to be the team that wins this. And I don't think the Miami Dolphins, even if the Dolphins get out to a big lead, they don't have the run game to fall back to maintain it. So it's going to be, I think, the team who can slow the other opposing offense down by controlling the clock. That's going to be a key factor. And I think our run game is much more suited to be able to do that.
On the defensive side of the ball, they got some really nice pieces. They're not all healthy. They're losing their number one player. We'll talk about him in a sec. But Christian Wilkins, probably the most dominant interior defender, not named Chris Jones or Aaron Donald. Outside of those two, I think he is like right behind them as one of the most effective pass rushers from the interior and run defenders. Like, this guy is really, really good. He's about to earn a massive contract. I don't think that they came to an agreement on the contract. I thought that was one of the storylines that they've been talking about for a while. Raekwon Davis, solid nose tackle. Zach Sealer, also a really solid interior piece for them. And then last year, Jalen Phillips blew up. He had a phenomenal season as a edge rusher for them last season. Ended up getting 10 sacks, a total of 77 pressures. That's pretty damn good for a second-year player going into his third season. He's really starting to hit his stride. I really like what they've got there for them. He's going to be a great player. This is probably his breakout season in terms of like his trajectory going as a rookie to his second year. This year, he's really going to come off and surprise a lot of teams. Give me a little bit of your thoughts of some of your favorite players on this defense. I can't hear you, Zach. You're muted, big dog. All right, well, you're still muted, and while you're trying to figure that out, I'll keep talking a little bit more. So Jalen Phillips finished 77 pressures. That is the sixth most amongst all edge rushers. And then the 10 sacks, like I just talked about. The only guys that finished with more pressures was Michael Parsons, Nick Bosa, Hassan Reddick, Max Crosby, Za'Darius Smith, and then Phillips is right there. So he's really coming into his own. Looks like you finally got off mute, and I'll let you go ahead and take over.
Yeah, I think defensively up front, Miami has a scary defensive line. Right in the middle, Christian Wilkins, Raekwon Davis, big bodies, Zach Sealer, that old school D end. And then on the outside, these guys can get after you, get after the passer. Jalen Phillips, you mentioned that new – the youth there, but they also have Bradley Chubb, who's no slouch. Andrew Van Ginkel, who's a really nice rotational piece for him. I think that's really the strength of this defense is up front, and they could disrupt you in a lot of different ways. And it'll be exciting. It'll be a good test for our offensive line because these guys are legit, and it'll be a good judgment point of our offensive line to see where these guys are stacking up with, you know, Rashawn Slater not playing a whole lot of snaps last year.
What is it about Bradley Chubb, man? Like, I feel like he was drafted like top 15, like six, 7 years ago. And I like him, but for one, he struggles to stay in the field. And for his draft position, I still think he is underperformed today of what his potential could be. Like, coming out of the 2017 NFL draft or whatever, like he was a hot name. Everybody thought that him and Vic were going to just tear defenses apart there in Denver. And then Chubb just failed to really make that massive impact. Like, he's never really finished as a top 10, top 15 edge rusher. Like, he's just been a very consistent player when he's been on the field. But at no point has he ever taken over a game. At no point do you look at this guy as a guy deserving of, you know, $20 million a year average. Like, he's a good player, but for whatever reason, I feel like he is underperformed. Do you get that? Like, do you see that from Bradley Chubb?
To be honest, I think he has a very similar career thus far to Joey Bosa, a guy who I think when fully healthy and when, you know, surrounded with defense or, you know, talent around him can be impactful, can be a defensive player of the year candidate. But when he was healthy, he didn't have help. His team was really bad. When he was healthy, when all the, you know, expectations were sky high, he struggled with injuries. So I think he's one of those guys when healthy, when surrounded by, when he doesn't have to do it all himself, he's a hell of a player. I just think he's been kind of plagued with inconsistencies. When he's healthy, his team's no good.
I haven't liked what I've seen to date from the player, because I think that he was so hyped as the top edge rusher taken in his draft class, and I just haven't seen it reach its full potential. He's never taken over a game. He's never ended a game. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, he rubs me a little bit wrong in terms of, like, what I think that he could have been versus what he is. They also have Jerome Breaker, bringing him back from last season, had 76 tackles, played, you know, over 1,000 snaps for them last year, 45 stops, you know, 12% missed tackle rate. Like, he's a pretty solid linebacker for them. They let go of Elandon Roberts from last season, and they brought in David Long from, I want to say, Tennessee is where he played last year. Behind him, Channing Tindall, Duke Riley, only going into the game with four inside linebackers. I think that's a place that you could kind of attack them a little bit if you really wanted to, with a fast guy like Austin Ekeler, and try to see if we can get that run game going. It's a solid interior group. I think that they're a little light in depth right now, and that's something you can't take advantage of them, make them run. It's going to be the first game of the season. How's their conditioning going to be? And that's an important position to have that at. Any thoughts on their linebacking room?
Just that they're not speedsters. They're not very great coverage guys, and I think they're going to have trouble dealing with Austin Ekeler out there trying to prove that he's worth an extension and trying to prove a lot of people, you know, wrong based off, you know, of what he was saying and all of his contract negotiations during the offseason. I think I'm expecting a very, very motivated and dangerous Austin Ekeler this year. And I think Jerome Baker and David Long Jr. are in for a very long Sunday afternoon.
And then the big news is that Jalen Ramsey starts the season on IR, had a knee injury pretty early into training camp, which has knocked him out. That's huge for the Chargers not have to play him first game of the season. Allows them to build up a little bit. They still have Xavien Howard, who is an A-minus coverage corner, always a guy who comes down with turnovers. I feel like every season he's up at the top of the list with 6, 7, 8 interceptions. Really sticky man in coverage, really instinctive, smart player. Probably their best player on defense right now. Jalen Phillips is kind of in that conversation as well as Christian Wilkins. But Howard has the all-pro seasons. He's got the Pro Bowl seasons. He's the vet of that group, and he's probably their number one leader in that entire defensive room. They've got some other good pieces back there, Javon Holland, Brandon Jones, Eli Apple, who was just in the Super Bowl 2 seasons ago with the Bengals, also cost them a lot. And then they have some young players like Cam Smith, who was drafted in the second round of last season's draft, and Cater Cajot. What do you think about the secondary as a whole? They also traded for Kelvin Joseph. Do you think that they match up well with the Chargers wide receivers? And kind of how do you think that this game plays out in terms of that secondary in the back half?
Yeah. I think Jalen Ramsey healthy. This is a very different team. Very different team. I think anytime you can add a talent like Jalen Ramsey to a unit, regardless of who you have, you're going to improve. He's just that type of guy. No Jalen Ramsey with this group, I think you're looking at a weakness. Now, Xavien Howard, I really want no part of him. I think he is a great coverage corner. Eli Apple, please and thank you. Give me all of the reps there. I'm attacking Eli Apple very often because I just don't think he's that good. He's on his fifth team now. A guy who doesn't have the production to warrant his draft selection was a number 10 overall pick who has just floated around the league at like dirty laundry. Nobody wants this guy. I think both defenses, the keys to slowing down the opposing offense is having good day from the secondary. I like how our guys stack up against their receivers. I like our receivers' chances against these DBs just because I don't think outside of Xavien Howard, I don't really respect these guys as coverage guys. And I think with Quentin Johnston and Josh Palmer, with the depth that we have at receiver and Kellen Moore's willingness to move guys around and exploit mismatches, I think we're going to have plenty of that come Sunday afternoon. And I think Eli Apple's going to struggle out the gate. And I'm excited for that because that means a big day for whoever's lined up across from him.
You know, he gets so streaky. Like, Eli Apple will have, like, two games, three games in a row. He'll just have a monster. And then, like, in those games where he has monster games, he's also giving up, like, big plays too, right? Like, he makes his plays, but he's so streaky and he goes so hot and cold that you see, like, the ability, which is why teams continue to sign him. But then you see the inconsistencies in him losing you games. Like, he is so streaky that it's almost scary. Like, he can pick you off or pick six. And then the next play, he could, you know, just trip over his shoelaces and just let the ball, like, let the play go for, you know, 90 yards touchdown. He gets really streaky. You're going to win more often than you will lose in those matchups against him, especially if you put a big body on him. I'm interested to see where this team plays Xavier Howard and how if they have him follow Keenan Allen across the field, if they have them play more zone. I mean, nobody wants to play man against Keenan Allen, even at 31 years old, because he's going to light you up. He's going to torch you. He does it every season. I want to see Eli Apple manned up in the slot against Keenan Allen. That would be my Christmas gift early, super early in September. That's what I want to see.
And the thing is, like, I still think that's Eli Apple's best chance. I think one-on-one against any of the other bigger bodies at receiver, and for different reasons, Eli Apple's is gonna get pieced up. I don't think he has the stickiness to stick with Keenan, and I don't think he has the physicality or the timing to effectively play big bodies like Mike Williams and Josh Palmer.
And that's funny because he's 6'1". Like, he's not a small corner. He's over 200 pounds.
I think his best matchup is against Keenan, which is nobody's wishing for that. So I just think, again, I just think it's
a great game for Quentin Johnston. It's a great game to give QJ that subpar competition, let him get in a couple big plays and really just grow into it. And you want to do that against a cornerback just like Eli Apple. That's who you do it against.
I think it'll be, I think our top four guys are getting at least three or four targets, if not catches. And so I think this is a big day to get a lot of the young guys going. I'm hoping, you know, third, fourth quarter, we're seeing a lot of Josh Kelly, Isaiah Spiller, because that means we're milking clock. And so that's, I think, ideal. Nothing ever goes to plan, but that's at least what I'm hoping for.
What are your keys to winning this game? To coming out of SoFi Stadium, and I'm going to be there, so I'm stoked. I can't wait to get back into Thunder Alley, get back in. I mean, this is it. I'm ready for it. So, like, what are the keys to this game, to winning this game? What do the Chargers need to do on the offensive side of the ball, on the defensive side of the ball, to walk away with a 24-10 win?
No, I think I think it's funny. I think the offensively, these teams kind of want to do the same thing. They want to sling the ball. They do it differently, but they're all about airing the ball out. Both kind of have question marks around their run games for different reasons. But I think you're going to see a lot of passing attempts. I don't think it's crazy to think that each of these quarterbacks could have 50 passing attempts at the end of the day. I'm hoping our defense shows up a little more so we don't see that. But I think offensively, spreading the ball around, mixing people up, being able to have Keenan hit 8 or 9 guys, I think that's really where we're going to shine. Having so much depth, being able to not have to force the ball to Keenan or force the ball to Mike because of circumstance. I think healthy, this team is dangerous, and they got 10 guys who can make serious pushes for touches. And so I think that's where it starts for the Chargers, is to be versatile on offense, being able to spread that ball around, and get into the second and third levels of the Miami defense, where I think their weaknesses lie. Defensively, it's all about shutting down the outside guys, Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. If we can at least make things tough for them, make Tua throw to his tight ends, throw to Braxton Berrios, check down to his running backs, that's where we win. If we allow Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle to combine for 200-plus receiving yards, I think that's when we can get in trouble.
I'm really excited to see how Austin Ekeler is utilized. We haven't got to see him in this offense yet. And no. If he's taking the Tony Pollard role, he's taking the jet sweeps, he's moving around the formation, I'm really looking forward to see what that looks like, because I think Austin Ekeler is a better running back than Tony Pollard. And I want to see Joshua Kelly in that Ezekiel Elliott kind of role, where he's more between the tackles. Same thing with Isaiah Spiller. I think that's a good committee to have there. Let Austin Ekeler be your chess piece that you're forcing defenses to key in on, and just leave those running lanes open. And I want to see how we air it out. I want to see how we utilize this passing offense. I've gotten a chance to go to training camp a couple times, and I love the fact that we're putting a big slot on Mike Williams, and we're letting Keenan Allen eat from the outside. He's been running more goal routes this training camp than he's done throughout his entire career. And it's not that he's taking the defenses up deep. He's using his route running to create some sort of separation out there. And, you know, being smart with his body positioning of coming up with some big plays. He's been talk of camp. I'm really excited to see how Kellen Moore utilizes all these pieces in a way different fashion I think we've ever seen with the players on this roster. You know, whether it's Austin Ekeler being that jet sweep man, whether it's having more of a defined run game where players know their roles, knows their assignments, in a more of a gap scheme, get up north and south, let's break some big ones. That's one of the keys I'm going to have, is just how does Kellen Moore utilize his weapons in this offense, and how much more efficient can it be than whatever Joe Lombardi put on the field last year?
I guess just to piggyback off that, how exciting was the run game through the preseason? I don't know.
I think we finished with the top rushing offense in the preseason, which is insane, because
that was what I was leading to. It was, I think, I don't remember the final numbers. It was like 450, 560 yards. The most in a preseason by any team since 2001.
And I do want to put like a little bit of brakes on that, just a little bit, because I think some of it was like two explosive runs for like 75-yard touchdowns. But you also look like Joshua Kelly broke one. Isaiah Spiller broke one. I don't care if it was called back for a holding, because had that holding not occurred, he still would have gone for the 75 yards.
No, I mean, asterisks definitely need to be put on any preseason stat.
Yeah, but you know what? You could put an asterisk on Mark McGwire's home runs. He still hit those. Like, I don't care what you said. Like, those still went.
My point is it shows growth at something that really held us back from making a serious playoff push last year, which was being able to establish a run. It is preseason, but still it shows you that the culture is changing, and that's positive for Charger fans.
On the defensive side of the ball, I think it's really important to be dominant in the run game. It's been a handcuff for us since 2012, right? Like, when was the last time we had a dominant run defense? And we just haven't. What scares me is we are bringing back the same exact defensive unit, with the only exception of Eric Kendricks, Tuli Tuipulotu, who isn't going to be the starter, Scott Matlock, who was a sixth-round draft pick. We're bringing back a banged-up Austin Johnson and a banged-up Atito Agbonia. I don't think we improved on the defensive line. It's just whether or not schematically we learn our job better than we did last year. I think that we have the guys. I really like Morgan Fox. I really like Sebastian Joseph Day. I'm still on the Austin Johnson hype train, and I think that he's just now getting in his work. He's going to be healthier-ish, right? Still, what, like 9 months removed from his knee injury? I think we have the pieces on the defensive line, especially with Joey Bosa back. Khalil Mack's probably getting a little bit older, but he's aged pretty well so far. Do we have those pieces? We didn't upgrade. Have those pieces learn their roles to be better at it? That's a scary question, and I don't know. I don't have the answer to it yet.
Well, I think the biggest key there, and it's not a new name, but definitely a newer type of, you know, physique this year. Joey Bosa putting on the weight he did to go back to his old school run stuffing D-end ways, I think is going to be key. Him being healthy, him feeling better in his body than he has the last 2-3 years. A lot of this game being so physical as it is, it is mental. Being able to talk yourself out of, oh no, I'm not hurt, I'm going to go 110%. Being able to have and you're only able to do that when you have confidence in your body, when you're not doubting yourself. And I think putting on that weight, having Joey, you know, showing up to camp when he did, I think it speaks a lot about his mindset this year. I'm hoping we got rid of the boneheaded penalties that have kind of plagued him recently. So I think Joey Bosa, healthy, where he is at physically and mentally, is going to be a big key to this unit beyond just not having extra names or different bodies in house.
The four players that come to mind when it comes to run defense isn't even Joey Bosa, because he's going to be off the edge. He's going to be making sure that the rushing lane is smaller, right? But it's Morgan Fox, Austin Johnson, Sebastian Joseph Day, and Eric Kendricks. Can those four guys in the middle, because that's where you get gashed in the run game, is in the A and B gaps. That's where it is. The home runs happen off the edge from not having contain, but the average is in the A and B gaps, because that's where most teams run to. Can Austin Johnson, Morgan Fox, Sebastian Joseph Day, and Eric Kendricks fill those gaps? Also, Kenneth Murray has been talked about very, very highly this year. He's in a contract year. I don't think that there's a player has more to play for this season, because he is shrugging off this. He is trying to make sun shine through a very dark cloud that has been over his head for the last 2.5 seasons. He needs to really show out this year. He's going to get some opportunities. I don't think Dion Henley is going to get those opportunities early on to start until Kenneth Murray shows the coaching staff that he can't get it done, at which point he's just going to be cast off. I don't think that he can play for another contract with the Chargers. I think they already brought in his replacement. Henley is going to replace him at some point during the season. I want to challenge Kenneth Murray to go make some money. Linebackers do not get paid in free agency. They're the running backs of the defense. They always have been. Can you go and try to make yourself some money in a contract year? You have not played well to date, but you've got all the athletic ability in the world. You've got so much to play for. Everybody's been against you. You don't have any fans. I can't think of a single Kenneth Murray jersey that I've seen at all on game day. I can't think of a single one. I own one. I actually own a Kenneth Murray 56 jersey. Let me wear it, bro. Give me a reason to wear that jersey on game day. I will go and pull that out. But until you show me something, man, I need to see it, because I had you as a defensive player of the year candidate on our first season on this podcast. What the hell, dude? Give me a reason to wear it. I'm a big fan. I love the story. Him, I love the whole like canine story from like the childhood, the whole family thing, the dynamic that he had to deal with being a big brother like that. Let me see you put it on the field because, man, you got all that ability.
It's time. He has nothing to fall back on either.
No, he doesn't.
Healthy, plenty of time, plenty of opportunities to grow as a player. So it's do or die time for K9. And I'm excited because I've only heard good things coming out of camp and excited to see that, you know, against some first team competition now that we're into the regular season.
Anything else you want to talk about? I know like our podcasts have been like really inconsistent. We didn't get a chance to really talk about the 53-man roster. There's a couple surprises. I think the biggest one is our safety, AJ Finley. I wasn't expecting this cat to make the roster. He does, which is great. A couple other names on there that made the roster that I was a little surprised by, but also not really, like Elijah Dotson making the roster. That's awesome. I think that he was really on that bubble of making it. It was really a decision whether or not they wanted to carry five or six wide receivers. They ended up going with five wide receivers. Jalen Guyton is on the IR. They were expecting to get him back. Whether or not he actually makes it back or he gets cut is really going to be dependent on how Berrios Davis starts this season. That's one of those storylines to watch. And then they brought in a couple pieces. They cut their fullback. I don't know if you saw that. Xander Horvath got cut. He was the 53rd man to make the roster, the first one to get cut. Any thoughts on this roster? Some surprise names that you didn't think were gonna make it. Also, hats off to our kicker who was shipped off to the Browns. Did a great job for us. Really changed the whole special teams unit for us. Shout out to a name that I can't think of right now.
Dustin Hopkins.
Dustin Hopkins. Thank you, bro. You really changed the whole kicking game for us. I appreciate that.
Was there a question in there at some point where?
Yeah, just talk about like what you thought about some of these other guys that made the roster. Tanner Muse was brought in. One of those names that kind of got lost in I don't know. Just talk about whatever you want to talk about before we close out.
I think the biggest surprise for me was no Xander Horvath. And I think the only reason I was surprised by that was of how important he was to special teams. He was on all four units. And I thought with, you know, Kellen Moore coming in, who has a little more usage for fullbacks, I thought he was pretty safe. Him getting cut, I think, speaks tremendously to how his coaching staff views Stone Smart, who is going to be the guy who's going to take a lot of those reps on special teams. I also think gives you a little more versatility from that fullback position, more of a Steven Anderson type of asset there. So it'll be interesting to see Stone Smart's acceleration in this offense, if he's used there at all, if it was just a straight special team for special team swap. I'm excited for Stone Smart's role to evolve, because I think all of those, I think Elijah Dotson is just a hold. I think he's going to be inactive come game day. I don't think those other bubble guys, I think I was surprised about AJ Finley, but I think he's mostly a depth piece. I think he's going to be mostly inactive come game days. Stone Smart is one of those roster bubble guys who I expect to be suited up and should be a contributor this year. It's just whether or not he can make it into, as you know, into that offense is what I'm kind of looking at.
Yeah, the Xander thing really caught me off guard. I think that the plan is if they're going to have a fullback in certain sets, it's going to be Trey McKitty. I think that they have a lot of the same capabilities. Xander, as soon as he was waived, he went and joined the Steelers practice squad. So I don't even think he really wanted to stay because he made the 53-man roster. Hard to believe that they weren't holding a spot for him on the practice squad. Hard to believe that happened, right? Yeah. I think that they wanted him. I think they saw an opportunity for an extra depth piece because he was released for Tanner Muse. And if I remember, I think Tanner Muse comes from the Steelers.
Yeah.
Special teams guy. So they saw enough of Tanner Muse to say, hey, if we lose this player, we're going to get something else that's even more important here. They really attacked the special teams units pretty hard, Tanner Muse being that main guy for them. Had 11 tackles over the preseason, so like he was involved at least. Had a fumble recovery during the regular season. Last season, it looks like. Only 20 career tackles. So like a really unknown, somebody I should probably go back and do a little bit of research on, but it's kind of hard because he hasn't played a whole lot. So they must know. I can't think of a single guy from the Steelers coaching staff who's on the Chargers coaching staff today. So I really don't know where this insight came from. It had to come from somewhere. But letting go of your seventh round draft pick who scored 2 touchdowns in back-to-back games to start this season last year, who was a core special teams player, who Daniel Popper thought was just a lock to make the roster without any thought of him going anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I think it's the fact that they're caring for tight ends. They're expecting to use one of those tight ends in fullback capability, and it's probably going to be Trey McKitty.
Yeah, well, if you need a bulldozer, if you need a – I think if you need a pass-catching threat, though, I like Stone Smart there. But
that's why you move Trey McKitty, right? Like, if having Trey McKitty as a fullback makes Xander Horvath redundant, why would you keep both players?
Yeah, I just think Horvath gives you different versatility because McKitty's going to play special teams too.
Yeah, but Xander Horvath is never going to get a run, right?
Neither
would. If you're picking Trey McKitty, like, can Xander Horvath play tight end?
I think he's more capable of playing tight end than McKitty is to play.
But fullback. Has he ever played tight end?
No, but has McKitty he's never played fullback? Like what?
So has now McKitty you have played to fullback? Teach. You have I guess to teach. Have you ever seen Xander Horvath run a deep route or a corner or a post?
He was a running back in college.
He was a running back, right? But running backs in this league are not worth anything. Ask every single top 10 running back on the market. Not worth anything. They're super replaceable. You can replace them with a 7th round draft pick, right?
Well, and I think it's interesting because I think it shows you they just don't have any value to that position because Xander was a freak as far as like stat, his size, him being
he was a running back for Purdue. Like that's insane.
I know, but just him being as fast as he was at his size, you'd think like, okay, yeah, we're going to keep him. We're going to keep him around. We're going to fill him out. He's going to be our special team guy. He never was great. He was just kind of mediocre. And I think they're ready to give somebody else a chance to be mediocre, if not prove themselves.
It was only one season. He was their final pick in the draft last year, and I thought he played well in his opportunities. I thought he was a pretty decent special teamer. I don't think that they wanted to lose him. I mean, they let him hit the practice. They let him hit waivers the second time around after he made the 53. I think that what it came down to was the fact that they already could replace that position with a similar position as a tight end. But as a tight end, you have more flexibility because you can use them a little bit differently as a threat in the passing game. They block in line. And Trey McKitty, even though he hasn't shown it since his rookie season, can be a B-plus run blocker in the right situation. We've seen it. It hasn't always come to fruition. But I think you get an element from Trey McKitty that you don't get with Xander. And I think that's what made him replaceable. Also, I don't think that they want to I don't think that they want to come clean about the fact that they think that that was a mistake.
What, Xander was a mistake or McKitty?
No, McKitty. McKitty was drafted a little bit higher than he should have been. Probably like 2 rounds. Realistically, I think that he should have been like a 5th round draft pick. I think that's what everybody else had him pegged. You just didn't see enough from him at Georgia as a pass catching threat. He wasn't the best run blocker on his team, that went to the 270-pound behemoth who's playing for probably the Eagles because they love Georgia players. And he wasn't the best receiving threat because obviously is an astronomical athlete. I think that he was just I don't got to talk about it anymore. He's just not the player that we all envisioned, that the coaching staff envisioned. I never saw him in that role. I tried to talk myself into it. It was really difficult to do. I did it. And now I can't even say that you were wrong because I started putting some hype behind his name. He started the one game, didn't show us anything, and he's really struggled. And putting him at fullback is probably the easiest place to throw him and make him not even noticeable.
Make it happen, then. Let's go.
Closing remarks, Zach. What's the final score of this game going to be?
Let's go. I'm excited, for one. And I'm really hoping we get out to off on a good note. And I'm going with a 31-24 Charger win.
I'm going to go 24-10. I think that we're going to come out hot. I've seen a lot of stuff from training camp that looked really good. I've seen a lot of battles. And while I think that the Dolphins might be further along because they didn't need to learn a new offensive scheme, I think we have better weapons that can be utilized in different kinds of ways. We have the run after catch specialist. We have the deep ball guy. We have the chain mover. We've got better running backs. We've got all three of our running backs would start in place of their number one running back. And I think that we get out to an early lead. We milk the clock. We man these boys up. We show them that this is a man's game. If you're 5'8", 5'9", you're not going to be able to get off the line of scrimmage. I don't think they have very many players over 6 foot. And they just, I don't trust their offensive line. I don't trust their tight end. I love their pieces on their defense. I think that their defense is going to keep them in a lot of games. But I think that this team is predicated on home runs. And how often do you get a home run, you know, once every couple games, once a week, once a month, right? Like, you're not going to get that many home runs. So,
And I will just say, I think the biggest advantage for the Chargers is just the amount of options we have. I think Miami has phenomenal number one and number two shot. Outside of that, I'm not super scared. And I really think the Chargers' strength lies with how many bodies that they have. Now, we're also a lot different than we were last year compared to them with having a brand new offense. I think our variance is going to cause them a little more struggles than their very, very similar offense that we're going to face.
I think that I think that he's going to emerge as their number one back. I think they want him to be Chris Johnson, CJ2K. I don't know if he's that player. I think that's going to be one of the big storylines of the season is he's in a really bad situation for running backs, which is really good for him because he could be the lone guy that stars there. I don't know if he's good enough. I don't know if he's fast enough. I know he's fast. I don't know if he's fast enough because Chris Johnson ran like a, what was it, a 4.27?
A 4,
like 4.24, yeah, something 4, like that.
4.2 something. And then I think it was clocked with clock running like a 4.3 and pads over like a 20 yard stretch at one point.
So can he be Chris Johnson? And that's what they want. They want somebody who can just find a seam and just outrun everybody. He's close. He's close. Does he have the vision for it? Also, a player who got to play underneath of our fourth round draft pick, Isaiah Spiller, they were teammates. He knows all about him. There's going to be some insider trading going on for the Chargers. Like, they got to know some of his weaknesses because of that. So something to watch for.
That and they have Jalen Ramsey, who, even though he's not healthy, gives you a lot of insight into what Staley wants to do.
Yeah. I just don't think it's enough. And, you know, they played each other last year. I think when I compare the two rosters, I even pair the coaching staff. Like, I have way more to talk about with the Chargers. I think that this team has double the number of star talent. And I think that they're deeper at just about every position, basically. I'm not worried about this game at all. I really think it's going to be kind of a breakaway 24-10 type of game. And I think that we need that coming out party.
I'd say more than anything, I am a little worried, but my nerves kind of are inward. Are we going to come out with low energy? Are we going to make silly mistakes early on? That's kind of what I'm worried about, us kind of beating ourselves. I'm not super worried about what they're going to bring to the table. Now, that's easy coming from a fan. I hope that that is not the mentality, and I'm pretty sure that's not the mentality that Staley is reiterating in the locker room, but I'm just excited to get back to football. We haven't seen this team play a meaningful snap since we blew a 27-point lead, so it's time to put that to rest, you know, let that story die, and rewrite this new 2024 story, which I'm hoping is exciting and has all the potential to be.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. My laptop's done. I'm going to see you in a couple weeks, Zach, for this Raiders game here in week 4. We got a lot of football. We got a lot of podcasting to do. We got a lot to be excited for. And I'm just hoping that this is the year that the Chargers don't let me down.